be told you that growth in accounting is slowing. The CPA license is fading, and over half of CPA firms are firing their own clients. This isn't some hypothetical future. It's happening right now.
And we have the data to prove it. From outsourcing trends to declining licensure rates, we're tracking real shifts that are changing what it means to run a successful accounting firm today.
Yep. And this is your early pulse check, because before the full IPA 500 rankings drop, this is their flagship research here, we're unpacking the numbers behind the scenes. So what's rising, what's fading, and what firm leaders need to act on now. So a very warm welcome to the Inside Public Accounting Podcast. If you caught last week's episode, you'll know we promised you a deep dive into the IPA top 500 rankings today. And trust us, we're excited to get that to you, just as you're excited to hear it.
Yeah, the top 500 is still on its way, and we can't wait to dig into the rankings, the firm movement, and big picture trends in the accounting profession. But before we get there, we just wanted to take a minute and this week and talk through some data that we feel like is really relevant for right now.
Yeah, and we had a topic last week on the private equity side of things, because it's something that everyone's unsettled about, I suppose, is a way of putting it. And that's the beauty of this format here on the show. We want to be agile. We want to make sure we're bringing you the most relevant discussions in real time. But yes, don't worry, our IPA 500 preview isn't going anywhere. That's the full breakdown of the rankings, the trends, the firm movement, and that's going to hit the feed coming up soon as we drop this show every Tuesday. But today, Chelsea?
Yeah, so today we're going to turn to the data that's been shaping conversations over the past few weeks.
Yeah, and if this is your first time listening, I'm Rob Brown. This is the podcast where we talk about the numbers and the narratives that are shaping the accounting profession. Inside Public Accounting have their fingers on the pulse of this. And today we're zooming out a little bit. We've talked private equity. We've teased the IPA 500 a little bit. But in this episode, as Chelsea says, we're going to do a pulse check on what's happening right now in public accounting and where is the data pointing to. So yes, joining me as always, my co-host, Chelsea Summers, Executive Director of IPA and the keeper of the numbers, the voice of the brand. It's great to have you with us, Chelsea.
Yeah, I like that, keeper of the numbers. Thanks, Rob. I'm excited to dig into this one as the keeper of the numbers. We've had hundreds of firms that have already responded to this year's IPA Practice Management Survey. And even though our data set is not final yet, we do have some early indicators on, you know, the trends in the profession and what is worth paying attention to from the data.
And we're going to start with the big picture in a minute, but I just want to ask you, Chelsea, off the record, why should firms be paying attention to this? Why can't they just be head down doing the things that they're already doing? Because it seems like firms are busy and they're doing okay.
Yeah. Same as last year is certainly a concept that a lot of firms subscribe to, but the world is changing so quickly right now. And there's so much, as we talked last week about private equity coming into the profession, and that's really changing even what a CPA firm looks like, partnership models. It's changing so much. So really seeing how firms are trending and seeing where the puck is going, as the saying goes, is really helpful to manage and run a successful accounting firm.
Yes. And we're inviting you to submit questions as well. We've got a few that came in from our previous episodes, and we're going to hit a couple of those today, but we do encourage you to engage with the show. So Chelsea, let's get stuck in here. What's the headline from this early 2025 data?
Yeah. So big picture, high level, growth is still happening. Firms are growing both organically and through mergers, but that growth is just slowing some over the 10-12% we've seen in the past couple years. On our preliminary data set, organic growth is about 8%, which is down from the 10% it was last year. Growth, including mergers, is at 9.1% for those early firms versus the 11.3% that it was last year. So momentum is easing, but firms are trying to adapt this complex environment through talent shortages and the economic uncertainty. So just, you know, still growing, but not quite as strong as it's been in the last couple of years.
Got it. And double-digit growth is a target for a lot of firms. But with growth comes challenges and filling the headcount and everything else. So what we're seeing, growth is healthy, maybe not as hot as last year. What about the cost side of the equation, Chelsea?
Yeah, costs are starting to inch up, especially personnel costs. They're about 49.4% of revenue this year, which is up from 48.8% last year. And as we would expect, technology costs are continuing to climb. Firms are really investing in their technology stacks, and we're seeing that play out in the information. 5.5% of revenue is spent on technology versus 5.3% last year. Things like automation, cybersecurity, and their digital infrastructure, the investments are being made carefully, and firms are trying to really drive their efficiency without overextending themselves in their technology. Yeah.
And you mentioned the spend on tech. I saw the headlines today that said RSM, UK and US, is planning to put $1 billion into AI over the next 3 years. I mean, where else would that money go? So
right,
they are
exactly.
investing heavily in the tech. And I'm sure we'll touch on that in future episodes because we do hit the trends here. But let's talk about productivity. It's a big buzzword in accounting. It's a metric that a lot of them hold up there as this is how we are doing. So how's that holding up?
Yeah, the productivity, which we're looking at through chargeable hours, it's relatively stable. Chargeable hours per staff member are about 1,316 versus 1,325. So less.
Is that surprising to you or is that something that's expected?
It's a little surprising, especially with the investments in technology and the investments in offshoring and outsourcing. You would think that firms would be charging less and becoming more efficient. Maybe it's just not caught up yet in the data, and that's something we maybe will see next year as all those technology investments start to come to fruition. But I was a little surprised to not see it drop more than it did.
Yeah, I was surprised too. And the report's very extensive that you brought out. That is the justification, isn't it, for technology that's going to increase profitability and increase productivity. Same with the outsourcing and offshoring. And that's going to be a big theme for us going forward, but it's also been a theme in previous episodes. What is the data telling us?
Yeah, so a lot of firms are continuing to increase their offshoring and outsourcing strategies. About 62.8% of firms that we surveyed in our early data are using some sort of outsourcing or offshoring, and that's up from 55% last year. So it's not a fringe strategy. Every year, more and more firms are utilizing that.
It's mainstream now, right?
Yeah, it's very much so.
When we look at the outsourcing more broadly, it goes beyond staffing offshore. We're going to be looking into this in depth, but just tell the story a little bit more for us with the outsourcing offshoring.
Yeah, it's no longer being used as just a seasonal or stopgap, you know, bringing in a couple staff members during tax season. It's really part of a strategic plan for growth. And in a lot of firms, it's multifaceted. It's both project-based, sending tax returns to some of these outsourced tax return third-party organizations. And it's having FTE either that you utilize through a third party or that are employees of your own firm in other countries. We're seeing more and more firms expand beyond just the single, like typically in India or Philippines, but really looking at South America and what they're calling a 24/7 approach. So there's always somebody available and working. So definitely something that's expanding and what started as a very limited way to help the productivity and help kind of flatten the cycle of the year is really something that is a bigger picture strategy for these firms.
Yeah. And is this just the big firms, small firms, mid-tier? What are we talking about here?
Yeah, it's something that is every firm. Firms of all sizes are investing in the outsourcing. And one thing I thought was interesting, we looked at the data for firms that do have an outsourcing or offshoring strategy, and they're showing higher profitability and faster growth.
Right.
Income per partner for the firms that have a strategy is about $706,000 as opposed to $642,000 for those that don't. So not a non-meaningful full increase. And the growth is stronger for those firms too, 12.1% versus 10.3%.
So it's the larger firms probably that are leading the way in this because they've got the resource, they've got the money to put into it.
Yeah, more than 80% of the firms that are between 50 and 100 million in revenue outsourced last year. And they're certainly doing it on a larger scale.
But the smaller firms, they're agile. They can do whatever they like. They can move nimbly. So are they following suit?
Yeah, they are. We have some firms below 5 million in revenue in our survey, and about 20% of those had an outsourcing plan last year, but 17% of those that didn't said they're planning on it next year. So it's something, again, that's continuing to grow, and every year more and more firms are seeing the benefits and really jumping in.
Yeah, so they're slightly more cautious, which is natural, but I am hearing stories about people that are starting accounting firms, they just have an outsourced back office, and it's just really one or two people in an office. So I guess the momentum's building with the outsourcing, and they're going to plan to increase this, I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. About 64% of firms plan to increase their usage in the next year, and only 8% plan to reduce it, which I think is very telling that it's successful and they want to build on it.
Yeah. The accountants listening are going to want to know what kind of work is being outsourced the most. Have you looked into that, Chelsea?
Yeah. I mean, it's really what kind of work isn't being outsourced at this point. There are third-party vendors that, you know, service every service line, like you said, back office. But really, tax prep and offshore staffing are what dominates in our survey. About 34% of firms are outsourcing tax returns, and they're doing an average of about 450 tax returns, where 43% are utilizing offshore full-time equivalents or FTEs at about 10 per firm.
I'm interested in the advisory question because I can't talk to anybody now without seeing advisory as the future, because there's downward pressure on compliance fees. A lot of automation and technology is taking up that slack that accountants would normally be famous for. So they're moving into advisory and really being more future-looking. So can you outsource advisory? What are the numbers tell us?
Yeah, absolutely. Things like virtual CFO services or financial reporting, it's not at all just compliance anymore. It's really every service line throughout the firm that they're looking at investments and outsourcing and offshoring.
So let's look at CAFS, the movement, the community. A lot more people are talking about it, small and big firms. What are the standout findings with the client accounting services?
Yeah, so we really took a look at firms that had more than 30% of their revenue generated from client accounting services and saw what do those firms have in common and how does that compare to other firms? What we found were some notable differences. They're growing faster. They're about 12.5% of total growth as opposed to 11.3% for the other firms. And their organic growth is also higher. But they're not quite as profitable as the other firms. Interestingly, they take home a little bit less per partner. Net income per partner is about $545,000 compared to $674,000 for the other firms. That's a big gap, but it reflects a model that's more team intensive and less partner leveraged, at least for now. Yeah.
And the problem's generally been with advisory is that accountants have struggled to price it, package it, and deliver it. I mean, they're stepping up into that space. I'm sure we're going to touch on advisory a lot more in future episodes because there's a lot behind that. But I'm getting the feeling that with advisory, the firms are winning on that and that they're moving more into that space. I wonder how the partners feel. Are they getting squeezed a bit with some of these numbers that some of them are going down?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a long game model for these firms. You're investing in the people and the infrastructure and the scalable services. The trade-off is lower partner earnings for now, but the potential, like we talked about, the higher growth, there's a potential for more value over time for these firms.
Yeah. Now, I'm a former high school math teacher. I'm a part qualified accountant, but I've had to learn a lot of the acronyms and the terms. Realization rates comes out a lot, and it's the vocabulary, it's the language of accountants, isn't it? So a lot of our viewers, listeners are going to be wondering about the realization rates. CAS seems like it's good with the control of the scope. So just talk about that a little bit more.
Yeah, you would be right. And some of that is based on how those services are billed. But we see that CAS heavy firms are realizing about 93.4% of their billings compared to 90%. So they are getting more of that money. That's a strong sign that they're managing client expectations, they're pricing smarter, and they're delivering value that clients want to pay for.
Yeah. Now, we said at the top of the show with our attention-grabbing opening that firms are firing their clients. And it's traditionally been a problem that firms are overwhelmed, they're overloaded, they say we've got too much work. And then when you're looking behind the profitability, they've got a lot of clients that are not particularly profitable and enjoyable, and they're doing the wrong kind of work for the wrong kind of people. So let's hit that for a moment. Let's bring client culling. It sounds harsh, but let's bring that under the spotlight now. You've been tracking this in this firm administration survey, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a fascinating lens on strategy. You know, we're no longer in the world where every client is a good client and we need every client that we can get. About 50% of firms culled clients last year, meaning they actively let go of clients that were no longer a fit for their firm.
And accountants are not great at saying no, are they? They're not great at turning work down. So that's progress.
It absolutely is. It's a growing trend that we're seeing. And it's not even something that we tracked until the last couple of years because it just wasn't a practice that was being done, where now half of the firms are. It's larger firms that are not only more likely to have formal client culling, but they're culling a bit higher percentage of their revenue as well.
Have you got some numbers behind that?
Yeah, for the firms over $75 million in revenue, they culled about $865,000 worth of clients last year. For the smaller firms, it's closer to $135,000.
That's a big difference. Do we know what's driving those decisions? They're being brave for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. It's things like the low margins on clients, high maintenance clients, or misaligned goals. As firms are shifting their strategies, there's some legacy clients that no longer fit the current strategy. As firms get more strategic, they're realizing that saying no to the wrong clients is just as important as saying yes to the right ones. It's not always about firing the bad clients, but sometimes it's like bringing up the resources for better fit clients or service lines.
Yeah. A mentor of mine told me many years ago, he got me into the accounting game, and he worked at Baker Tilly, and they had a client that was 40% of the revenue of their particular office. It's a massive client, but took 70% of the resources. So exactly. He said to his fellow partners, who wants to fire this client? Now, they didn't want to, but he said, who wants to keep him? And they didn't want to do that either. So they actually sent him a very well-worded letter that said, we'd love to keep servicing you and keep the high levels that we've been accustomed to, but under the current economic climate, we're going to find it very difficult to keep that going. We're going to put your fees up by 30%. We'd love to continue looking after you if you decide to stay. But if you would like to go, we will facilitate that transition to another advising firm. And the client stayed. But they did it again the next year because it became even more demanding. And the year after, and this is the telling bit, Chelsea, they increased, because they had all this extra capacity, they increased the size of their book by 80%.
That's
how much he was locking up. So there's a story.
They always say that when you're looking at calling clients, raising their fees is not the way to do it. You need to actually call your clients, because as your story indicates, just because you raise fees by what you think is an amount so big that they are never going to accept it, a lot of times they do. And then you're still working for that client who is not a match for your firm.
But it's not done in an ad hoc way, is it? There's got to be some focus, some intentionality about this, because it's sensitive.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And taking a look at your client base and categorizing them an A client, a B client, and it's not just based on the amount of fees that they deliver, but is the timing that they're getting their paperwork to you appropriate? Do the staff enjoy working on it? Is it increasing staff morale or decreasing staff morale? Are they giving you referrals? I mean, it's a very encompassing look at your clients, but that's really a practice that needs to be done before you start calling clients, is really saying who is the right fit for your firm.
Very good. Let's talk about the licensing side of the CPA. We hear a lot about the 150 hours and many states doing their own thing. So let's hit that for a moment. You wrote recently that its dominance might be slipping, might be fading. So what's actually going on here?
Yeah. So firms having individuals with a CPA license is declining. In 2020, so just a couple years ago, 56% of all professional staff had a CPA license. This year, it's 48.4%. So quite a large decrease there. And it's even decreased further in those larger firms, just about 41.5% of all staff over 75 million in firms over 75 million are licensed CPAs.
That's astonishing. I did hear a story recently about a business that had given its accounting work, not to an accounting firm, but to a company that was accredited in a certain software business was used to. And they said, look, do all our accounts on this. So they went to a software accredited person, and then they got some legal person in the end to submit the accounts and do that legal side of it. So what we're talking about here is a significant shift. Fewer people becoming CPAs or firms hiring differently?
Yeah, it's both. It's absolutely both. There's been, like you said, stories about which I think maybe the graduates are starting to increase. So hopefully maybe this trend we'll see change. But in the past couple of years, there's been fewer accounting grads that are going the licensing route. And also, as firms are shifting to a more advisory strategy, they're hiring more non-CPAs strategically, especially in advisory or technology or in operational roles. And it certainly doesn't mean that the CPA license is irrelevant, but the role of it is evolving. Some states are experimenting with alternative pathways to make the credential more accessible. And firms are trying to figure out how to build strong teams that blend those credentialed and non-credentialed talent together.
That does make sense. And if you think of the accounting role, it is predicated on risk management, the regulatory side of things, the compliance side of things. You don't need an accountant necessarily to advise on where your business is going, to look at the numbers, to analyze those, to make predictions and recommendations, which is the whole advisory piece. I guess what's the takeaway here for the leaders of firms that are tuning in, Chelsea?
Yeah, I think big picture is that the profession is changing in real time and we're watching it. The way firms grow, the way they staff, the way they price, and even how they define their professional credentials. It's all starting to evolve, and there's no one-size-fits-all model anymore. The firms that succeed are the ones that are making intentional choices, which very much echoes the conversation we had last week about private equity, and you need to make an intentional strategy. And And you make has to be right for your firm. And whether it's leaning into CAS or outsourcing or calling clients or adapting to new talent models, the firms that pause and assess and act with purpose are the ones that are going to lead in the profession.
Exciting times. I do want to hit a couple of questions, Chelsea, before we go, because we encouraged our audience to get involved and they definitely have gone involved. You're on LinkedIn. There's the website. You're taking questions in. We got a listener commented on LinkedIn, something you put out, and asked this question: is it really possible to preserve culture and autonomy once private equity comes in, or is that wishful thinking? Now, we hit this last week, and that's a great question. What's your call there?
Yeah. So I just had a conversation yesterday with somebody, and we were talking about how private equity investments really amplify the culture. It's not like necessarily that the private equity investment or private equity organizations coming into an accounting firm is a net positive or a net negative. I think it really just, it takes whatever culture is already built inside the firm and it fast tracks it.
Amplifies it.
Yeah. And if that culture is really driving, you know, everybody needs to be here, 65 hours a week, and we're really pushing hard, then I think that that's going to be amplified. If the culture is work-life balance and, you know, we're here to serve our clients and we're going to be technology focused and really trying to change the models, then I think that the private equity investments are going to amplify that part as well. So I think it really depends on where the firm's starting from.
Someone in our audience also asked, why are the firms that haven't taken private equity investments still reporting an increased pressure to grow? Now, obviously, this pressure on staying independent and resisting the lure of private equity money, but they could just muddle through, couldn't they? They just keep on going at a very moderate growth rate, but maybe they're being pressured to grow to keep up.
Yeah. So private equity has really raised the bar across all firms. Every firm, even firms that are not private equity backed, are now competing against firms with more capital, with more aggressive timelines and more resources. And the pressure is being felt really across the profession. When you're competing against a firm with a $100 million capital investment and you are dealing in the same world that you were in 5 years ago, you know, that's a tough market to be in.
Yeah. We got a question in, and I'll take this one. We mentioned faster growth at the private equity-backed firms, and somebody's asking, is that translating to better margins and profitability? And from what I'm seeing, these PE-backed firms, they are running leaner, they're growing faster, but that's not necessarily profitable. There's a really thin line, isn't there, between scaling efficiently, burning out your people, and just going at 100 miles an hour?
Yeah, absolutely. And while running 100 miles an hour can work for a little bit, how long is that sustainable? And that's something I think everybody's keeping their eyes on, especially with the growth and the mergers. How long can we keep this up? It doesn't seem like forever, but it's something we'll continue to keep our eyes on.
We've got a couple more quick questions, Chelsea, and it's great having you with us to address these. Question came in that I particularly loved. What should smaller firms be watching for? Are there risks to ignoring the private equity trend entirely, burying their head in the sand and just carrying on regardless?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly the IPA 100 firms are the ones that we're seeing that have the most private equity investments, but that doesn't mean that it's not something that smaller firms need to stay alert to. If the large competitors that are in your market are changing their pricing, their technology investments, or their recruiting strategies, that's going to ripple outward. It's not about jumping in, but it's understanding the new rules of the game that you're playing in.
Yeah. I send with a bit of fun. I don't know who asked this one, but the question came in. If private equity had a theme song, what would it be? I'm thinking Money, Money, Money by ABBA might be a good one. What about you?
That's a good one. Or how about Under Pressure by Queen?
Ooh, nice. Or what about The Clash? Should I stay or should I go? That's a good one. Okay, we're gonna wrap up this show because we've covered a lot today. Just tell us a little bit about this report, the full IPA practice management report that's coming out, because this is exciting for you, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So the information that we just talked about was covered in our June IPA Insights that were published in mid-June. Those are available to purchase on our website at insidepublicaccounting.com. And the preview of the data that we talked about was a preview of what's going to be in our IPA practice management report, which covers the more than 600 firms that participate in the IPA survey, and that'll be published in September. And you can pre-order those reports now as well.
Yep. And Chelsea and I are going to be diving into the stories behind the numbers. That's insidepublicaccounting.com. As you've seen, we want to hear from you. We will field your questions. Either Chelsea or I will have the answers, or we'll know someone that does. We're asking you, how are you managing these changes in your firm? It could be private equity, but some of the topics we've talked about today, what's working, what's not. Drop us a line on LinkedIn, on the podcast podcast page. You can reply to the newsletter that goes out. We are always listening. We will hit those questions for you. And don't forget, subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. We are growing the audience here. We've had a wonderful response to our first couple of episodes. And next week, we are going to be reviewing the IPA 500. So until then, on behalf of Chelsea and myself, thank you so much for listening to the Inside Public Accounting Podcast.